present the News Quiz with your host, Sandy Toksvig.
Hello and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the Times read by Rory Morrison.
A man with a form of tuberculosis so deadly that he's under the first US government-imposed quarantine in 40 years has said that he flew to Europe for his wedding in Greece. He was contacted on honeymoon and told not to fly home and put more people at risk. So he flew to Canada instead.
Now, thanks to Simon Boas for sending that in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Jeremy Hardy and Fred McCauley. And opposite them on my left, Carrie Quinlan and Alan Corran. Jeremy, who has put a rocket under Europe about global warming?
Well, rockets are to do with American putting rockets in Eastern Europe in order to shoot down rockets from Iran, which they haven't got. That's the G8, isn't it? There's yeah. been a big kerfuffle this week, and Bush and Putin were being a bit arsey about each other. But then they made up.
And you thought, well,
yeah.
yeah.
And then you thought, well, you know, come on, boys. You've been friends before. Bush said very little when Putin was laying waste to Grozny, and Putin said very little when Bush was laying waste to Fallujah. So you think, come on. You can be friends. You're both blood-stained monsters. Come on, sort it out. And then they looked at each other and went, get out, you. And then it was all okay. But the global warming thing, they seem to have pushed through as well. But it was very well. I was watching it on BBC News 24, and Blair was and Bush were doing a joint press conference, and their body chemistry is really strange, because when you watch them, when Blair is talking, Bush sort of looks around him like a kid in a nativity play who got a part he didn't want. There's eight of them, and they all get together. Why they can't just video conference or meet in someone's flat?
Do you know what I think? If Putin and Bush want to see how people that don't get on well together should behave around a table, they should just look back a few weeks at Ian Paisley and Martin McGuinness, which was great. The pair of them sitting having a chuckle together. I heard a pal of mine saying, I saw Ian Paisley giggling. And I said, what?
Ha 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 ha! What a giggle! Come here, Martin, you wee scamp. There's lots of headlock there. 30 years of terrorist atrocities there, yeah, you scamp.
There was this guy this week, though, this Polish postal worker who's woken up from a 20-year coma just to see the Cold War start up again. And
woken up to find everybody's a plumber. It must have surprised him. Wake up in Gdansk and everybody's carrying a spanner. You think, what's
well,
happening?
Well, there's no one there. They're all carrying
the airport.
Bush, Blair and Putin and other world leaders are meeting at the G8 summit in Germany to discuss climate change and nuclear missiles. The Bush administration is still refusing to accept the basic science of climate change. No surprise there. Still refusing to accept the basic science of evolution, so what do you expect? So 2 points there to Jeremy. Fred...
Looking at their president, you can understand why they would dispute evolution, no comment.
Frederick, who is accused of arming its customers with a princely sum?
Is this Saudi Arabia?
It is, yeah.
One of our... Can we name them? Is it?
You can say what you like.
BAE, who make war planes, which sounds like an old Geordie joke. Did they have war planes? Why, no, I think they had their own. And I know, and I'm going to trust Jeremy to give us the moral argument about government-approved corruption, but for me, this story is all about accounting irregularities, because somebody somewhere has been knocking 30 million quid into an account every quarter. That's 120 million a year. And somebody else has come along and audited this and said that it's okay to go, and the Inland Revenue have allowed it as an expense. I can't even get my gardener's wages through my books. My kids' school fees only go through as research and development. I occasionally get the odd T-shirt through if I've got the receipt.
You have a gardener?
A gardener, yes.
Do you?
Yeah, well, the other one resigned, so it's just...
But it's Prince Bandar who's got it all in his back pocket. Mm. And he's quite extraordinary that... I mean, it was a great week for cynicism and naivete. I'd assumed that we'd gone into Iraq. One of the tiny reasons in the small print at the bottom of the page was to impose democracy. But we're very happy to sit down with this bastard from Saudi Arabia, slip him £1 billion to sell him arms, and not bother at all about the nature of the government in Saudi Arabia. Why don't we go into Saudi Arabia and impose democracy? Because they've got all the guns we would use because we sold them to them.
Yeah,
mind you, that was true of Iraq as well.
Fred?
Yes?
You know, you mentioned your children's school fees.
Yes.
Education's free. You really ought to ring the head about that. Under the 1945 Education Act, someone's taking you for a ride, you know. You get charged for going in the playground as well.
Are you paying for the gardener's children as well?
No, no, no. Well, not that I know of. Two of them do look very like him.
You're sending... I didn't know... This is pretty new to me. You're sending children to a Scottish public school. You're breeding prime ministers. Beyond the border.
I thought if you were posh from Scotland, you spoke like that. I thought you spoke with an English accent if you were posh Scottish.
Yes, they do. I'm not posh Scottish.
But a gardener is sending your children to private school.
I'm rich. I'm not posh.
All right. Well, this is the allegation that the UK's largest defence company, BAE, with the approval of successive governments, secretly paid Prince Bandar of Saudi Arabia a total of more than £1 billion in bribes to secure Britain's biggest ever weapons contract as part of the Al Yamama. Doesn't it sound like an organ of some kind? Now, Prince Bandar on the Al Yamama.
It means dove.
Does it?
Yeah, it means dove, and that's beautiful. An agreement that's 35% moisturiser.
So 2 points to Fred. Carrie, which logo should be no-go?
It's the 2012 Olympics logo, isn't it? God help us. Which everyone hates, quite rightly.
Lord Coe likes it.
He does, but he doesn't count. I mean, it is just appalling. And the fact that part of the brief was it has to be street meant it was going to be awful. The politicians using a word like street.
Is that not with it these days?
I think that's the problem. It is hip to the beat, Dad. But if you're over the age of 19, it's toe curling. And it really does look like... Well, I mean, it's the design equivalent of your parents dancing at a wedding. It's just ghastly.
I saw it in a newspaper, first of all, and honestly, goodness, I wasn't paying attention. I thought it was the puzzle page. I spent half an hour trying to solve it.
But they kept using the word street, and then they started talking about branding. And, you know, branding is a word from Satan's own dictionary. And it just went on and on. It's a strong brand. And it's not a bland brand. I can't believe they had the gall to say that. You know, we don't do bland, said Sebastian Coe.
Well, I didn't mind the logo. It's just, how did it cost £400,000 to come up with it? I mean, if somebody had said, look, it was after lunch, we had a couple of drinks, the deadline was upon us, and we thought, oh, this will do. You'd think, oh, fair enough. You know, 40 quid. And then they said, oh, look, don't worry, but don't worry about the 400,000. Just buy us a drink next time you see us, or something like that.
It isn't just the logo. I mean, it transmogrify. I've watched it on television. It's longer than Newsnight. It goes on for about half an hour, this thing, changing and morphing. And when do you use that? Under what circumstances? You don't put it on your shirt, do you?
Coe said they didn't want something that people would buy a shirt with it on and then not wear it and then do the gardening in it in 6 months' time. And they won't. They won't buy a shirt with that on. So they win.
The fact that our logo caused this whole country to have epileptic fits is quite a lot about our prospects for competing, doesn't it? The nation of mathematics. Why the hell are we holding this thing?
On Monday, the logo for the 2012 Olympics was unveiled to an avalanche of criticism, while on Tuesday, a promotional video featuring the design had to be recut after it triggered seizures amongst epileptics. So that was before they saw what it cost. Alan, who registered his war on terror this week?
Everything was going to be codified, systemized, and you would have degrees. Basically, it's league tables for terrorists, rather than National Health Service. And minor terrorists will play at the bottom in the Corinthian League. But if you get up to the Premiership, you could actually take out New York and London. And Blair is working on that in dying days of Goethe Demeron. Very strange. Hitler just opened the sewers. I don't know why Blair has to interfere in all these other things, but he's actually putting the world to rights. And one of them is to codify every terrorist there is, and they will have to register, and they will not allow to be terrorists unless they have registered.
Yeah. Is there a roll call every morning?
Yeah.
John Reed shouting out the terrorist names.
Bin Laden. Yes, sir.
Actually, it was rather sweet. It talked about John Reed, the outgoing Home Secretary, and I thought it sounded like a personal ad. Outgoing Home Secretary seeks civil liberty to rough up.
But isn't it time that terrorism was made illegal? Surely. And that would solve this problem. That surely...
Registering's too good for them, isn't it?
Well, it's very funny that this new law is going to force people who are convicted of terrorist offences to fill in a form, and they've got to give their name and their address. and their national insurance number. He thought, well, that'll sort it. There's one thing a fanatical terrorist absolutely will not do. It's give false details to the police. It's that's sorted out. In the week in which PM in waiting, it's like a pantomime thing, Gordon Brown, still does, suggested he'd been toughening anti-terrorism laws, the outgoing Home Secretary, John Reid, announced a raft of possible new security measures, including a terrorist register. The idea is to have a way of registering people to keep track of people who've already committed terrorist crimes, along with another plan obliging the owners of escaped horses to bolt their stable doors. At the end of round one, the scores are Jeremy and Fred have got 4 points, but Alan and Gary have got 5. Can we start round two with a cutting from the Croydon Guardian?
A South London man mortgaged his home so he could transport a crashed passenger jet 230 miles and turn it into a restaurant. But the financial risk and hard work paid off as he sold the finished restaurant for a profit. Mustafa Alawad said everyone thought it was a crazy idea and that it would never get off the ground.
And our thanks to Dennis Barber for spotting that. Jeremy, why is play just not fun anymore?
Oh, this is the new advice to parents is that we should be not so diligent in making sure our children are okay. And there was a discussion about this on the wireless. I was listening to Esther Ransom was putting up a spirited defence for the idea that a parent's responsibility is to try and keep their children safe. But Anne Atkins was on the opposite corner. Anne Atkins, some people would call her God-fearing, but I think God is more scared of her than she is of him. She would say, oh, this is all nonsense. We used to blind our children and send them into the desert. And statistically, it's far more dangerous to put a child in a car. And we tried that as well. We put our children in cars and took the handbrakes off and pushed them down hills and they still survived. And I did grow up, in spite of what you might think, in the area between Aldershot and Sandhurst. And it's only in recent years that people have realised that living under military occupation doesn't make a place safe and secure. And the whole area was covered in unspent ordnance. And we would be out foraging for old shells and things in the woods on the firing ranges. And we were allowed to do this, and it was just expected, you know, it would be okay. And we would be up in the woods, and you could fire a bullet, actually. In the Ash Ranges, you'd get a bullet in its cartridge, because the squaddies would leave these lying around. And you'd bring it home, and you put it in your dad's vise, tighten the vise up, but leave the back of the cartridge slightly proud, hit it with a hammer, you could fire it across the garage. Of course, this was the 60s, we had to make our own guns in those days. Kids today, they want it all on a plate, you know. Got ready-made guns.
My dad had a vice, but it was alcohol.
The metres away from home has diminished over the years, hasn't it? So your kids now only go about 7 metres from the house or some ridiculous statistic.
Well, it depends on how the string is that you've tied them to. Apparently, half the adults questioned thought that 14 was the age that children should be allowed to go out unsupervised. I mean, by that age, Alan, you were already working down the mines, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, the meterage was long. My parents were waiting for me to come home. waiting for a tin of Spam for a long time.
A new report has found that many children are not allowed outside to play because of their parents' paranoia. And the report says that modern children are growing up in a world where friendship is rare and life is full of fear and anxiety. Hey-ho, they've got to learn, haven't they? Gary, who has had his scooter confiscated?
Oh, yes, sad week for the Muppets. The scooter's going to jail. Yep. He was Dick Cheney's chief of staff, who has been done for obstructing justice over the whole Valerie Plame affair, where the CIA agent's name was released to the press. And his defence lawyer brought up in court various letters he'd received of support. But I think when your character witnesses are Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Donald Rumsfeld and John Bolton, you're going down.
I'm called Scooter, apparently, because he scooted around his cot as a baby. You know, I think when he grew up to become chief aide to the vice president, he might leave that behind you.
But no, he took his cot with him.
Oh,
you
yes.
Can't hold on to nicknames. People do. You meet a woman who's like the finance editor of The Spectator or something, and she says, hello, my name's Poopy Farquharson.
I think it's rather a shame that Paris Hilton has been released from jail, because I was quite hopeful that they might share a cell, thereby making it so much worse for both of them.
Paris. I had a look at her. She's a thin woman. I don't know if she was released or just walked through the bars. I mean, that's...
Paris Hilton, we all have acknowledged what a stupid name it is. And she was named by her parents. They didn't obstruct that at all. But I once had a girlfriend with something similar of a name. She was called Ravenscraig Guest House. All rooms en suite.
Former chief aide to US Vice President Dick Cheney, I. Lewis Scooter Libby, has been sentenced to 30 months in jail for lying and obstructing an investigation into the leaking of a CIA officer's name. Scooter Libby was described by his defense lawyer as an exceptional public servant and described by George Bush as someone I've never heard of, honest. Alan, why should the middle classes just stop whining?
This one's about booze. And the middle classes who are going to be forced to stay at home because they can't go out and smoke aren't going to be allowed to drink at home either because it's very bad for them. And they're allowed one glass of wine, calmness, and that's about it. Drinking is bad for you. But it's not enough for the government to say drinking is bad for you. They want you to stop doing it because it's bad for you, which is quite extraordinary when you have a government that's doing so much bad things for everybody else. But it's not quite as bad as bombing, but it's bad for you.
Well, I think that it's fair to say there's no worse crime in the country than dropping off in front of Newsnight.
I think people actually know that there's alcohol in wine already. I don't think many people, even in book clubs, think it's just a kind of delicious fruit smoothie. I think the whole reason why people drink it is because it's alcohol. For thousands of years, people have been extraordinarily inventive in finding ways of getting drunk. When you think about how complicated it is to invent a drink, I mean, how would you discover wine? I mean, why would you even think to walk on the spot barefooted in a vat full of grapes if you weren't pissed already?
It's the labelling, though. Isn't it? I mean, I smoke. The cigarettes I buy say, smoking is harmful, do not take it up. They put it on a cigarette packet I've just bought. Hey, what kind of advice is that? It's the thinking that goes behind it. It's the sleeping pills, and they may cause drowsiness.
It was brilliant the way it played in Fleet Street, though, because if you want a bad reception in Fleet Street, tell the columnists that you're going to crack down on drink. Not only do columnists drink, they drink while they're writing. Every column was like, you want to fight over it? I'll take you. I love you. You're my best friend. You bastard. I can drive. I'm fine. Is that enough words? The whole of Fleet Street is absolutely... Because that's the strange thing about the middle class and the middle-aged is because wine is sort of respectable and you sort of hold it in the air and twiddle it and look at it and sniff it and sluice it around your mouth and talk about chalky soil, no one minds that you're a rattled old drunk. This is a mistake that Pete Doherty has made. If he was the smack correspondent of The Economist or something, he would be considered a bon viveur and connoisseur of intravenous drug use.
Middle-class wine drinkers are the latest group to be targeted by the government in their attempt to change Britain's booze culture. The government strategy was launched by Ministers Vernon Coker and Caroline Flint. According to Public Health Minister Caroline Flint, it is unacceptable for people to use alcohol as an excuse to urinate, vomit, or carry on in the way people are carrying on. I don't know, it's a better excuse than I'm the Bishop of Southwark, it's what I do. At the end of round two, Jeremy and Fred have got 9 points, Alan and Carrie are still in the lead with 10. Before we start round three, here's a cutting from the Irish Independent concerning the recent elections.
Gerry Adams resisted all questions as to what form of government his party might support after the election, insisting the votes had to be counted first. "We're not interested in being in government for the sake of it," he said. "We don't want to see Sinn Féin bums on ministerial seats just for the crack."
And our thanks to Claire Watkins for that. Jeremy, mirror, mirror on the wall, who's the most fashionable of them all?
There's a mirror that's been developed. I don't know if it talks or... But it's got a thing. It can pick up the barcode. You hold something up in front of you and it then suggests other things that would go with it. Somehow it can even... I don't know how tactfully it tells you that the size is wrong, but this is... They're saying this is going to take enormous... strain off relationships and off of men who spend a lot of time sitting on chairs outside changing rooms wondering where their lives went so wrong. Because it is a horrible thing. You're waiting outside a changing room and a woman comes out and says, "Well, is this flattering?" And you think, "Oh, God, there's no right answer. Just tell us what it is you want us to say." Stop testing us like this. Because if I say, you know, it's not flattering, it means you look fat in it. And if I say, yes, it is flattering, it means you don't look fat in it, but by definition must be fat in real life.
I'd love to hack into this mirror and just change it so that it should hold it up, press the button, flash the barcode at it, and it just goes, whatever.
Can I just be clear, Fred, with your dress sense, that you have actually been watching fashion television? Can I just be clear?
I don't think there's a computer involved in it at all. I think it's a two-way mirror with a couple of sales assistants on their break, roaring with laughter behind it, going, no, no, buy the bright pink shirt.
Should explain to the listeners that Fred was forced to change out of a pink shirt before the show by me for his own good, and instead goes and buys a Nike shirt. And sitting here, it's like looking at the new Olympic logo. I'm thinking, a child could have made that.
This is the magic mirror which can give customers fashion tips and advice about sizes when they're trying on clothes in the changing room. The mirror was unveiled at a trade fair in Birmingham, where it amazed passers-by with its razor-sharp advice, such as, move away from Birmingham.
Do you think Kate Moss has got one that says, get that dust off me and stop scratching me with that razor blade?
Fred, why are the boys in blue concerned about lunacy?
One of Her Majesty's constabulary has conducted a survey and has discovered a correlation between acts of violence, drunkenness, and full moons.
Mm, it's the Sussex police.
Is it Sussex?
It's full moons where Sussex. You pull the buttocks apart.
I've just had a brainwave.
Good grief, Fred.
Sussex police should issue everybody that goes out with a pair of cardboard glasses with a little crescent shape over the eyes.
You know, they've been looking for a new Home Secretary.
And bald and Scottish men.
Bald Scottish men with insane ideas. Wait a minute. Sussex police have discovered that the crime rate goes up when there's a full moon and are planning to put extra officers on the streets at those times. They said that Brighton's pubs and clubs are full of unhinged, drunken psychopaths bent on violent destruction, and that when there's a full moon it gets even worse. Carrie, which great wall of fat is being waltzed away?
This is the Chinese kids who are being forced to dance at school because there's an obesity problem and there's a form of sociability among Chinese children. I don't know, I think if you're 15 and you know how to waltz, that's not really going to turn around your social life. Unless you had one. It might work then. But it's this whole thing about a huge obesity problem in China. And what I want to know is, does that mean that the old thing about them all jumping up and down at once, is that going to be worse?
You must have had ballroom dancing when you were a boy, Alan. You must have had to...
You don't want to get in there. I was taught to dance by a man called Sergeant Ronga, who was sergeant in the parish... No, I swear to God, on my children's life. He was in the parachute regiment, and when he was demobbed, there wasn't much to do, but he was tremendously light on his feet. I mean, he'd been an arm and all that. There was no call for Germans to have their necks broken anymore. Ronga then became an instructor at the Woodpecker Pub in Turnpike Lane. And upstairs in the Woodpecker Pub, story, Humphrey Littleton and Monty Sunshine and Wally Fawkes, the great trog cartoonist, used to practice with their rehearsal rooms, and we danced downstairs, Ronga and I, to an HMV gramophone with Victor Sylvester on it. And when I got my bronze medal in junior ballroom dancing, my feet didn't touch the ground because he held me, and it was like Donald O'Connor dancing with a mop. And I can feel now holding on to his biceps. They were like shot put biceps. And when the man from the British Federation of Dance turned up, it was just the two of us, just Ronga and me. And he'd been at Aramanche and all these places, and I was there in my maroon blazer and shorts. And this man in a raincoat, rather like Eeyore Wistie, turned up to judge us. And he brought his own records, and these were the days when the 78s were in paper covers. And he said, I've got these, they're Joe Loss. And Ronga said, we danced to Victor Sylvester. And the bloke from the Institute said, I'm afraid today we're going to dance to Joe Loss. And Ronga said, no, we're not. And I stood by in this sort of dancing dispute, and I swear, he broke this Joe Loss record. And he put on Victor Sylvester, and I got the medal. But Hump was playing upstairs. I think it was during the tango. Humphrey was playing Bad Penny Blues, and it was very noisy. Cornet's enormously noisy. Very thin wooden floors in this pub. And Ronga said, I want you to go upstairs and tell him to shut up, because I can't hear Victor. So I went upstairs, and it's amazing, because we became friends much later, and said to Humphrey, would you mind keeping a piss off? So I went downstairs, and Ronga went upstairs, and it was silent. He came down, and I said, what did he do? He said, I gave him a look. Anyway, that's how I learned to dance.
Back to the question. It was about China. The waltz is one of seven dances the Chinese Ministry of Education is making a compulsory part of PE in an attempt to reduce childhood obesity and improve social graces. Apparently, the waltz was rapidly spread around Europe by Napoleon's soldiers, much like VD, in fact. Before we reveal the final scores, let's hear the cuttings the teams have brought along. Mr. Hardy, please.
This was sent in by Julie Sanderson of Winchester. It's in the small ads. It says, the perfect flea trap... and contents, £10.
Fred.
Sent in by Ms. Victoria McNamara from Dumfries. It's about a Stirling man who appeared in court on various motoring charges and was fined an additional £100 on the spot when he answered his mobile phone while standing in the dock. The accused fished the phone out of his pocket as its techno dance ringtone echoed around Stirling Sheriff Court. He went, hello, mate! I'm in court!
Carrie. Harry Force, 71, a Tory candidate fighting for a seat on New Forest District Council, will continue using his campaign leaflets despite discovering that, thanks to an unfortunate design, the message, Vote Force, followed by a large X, inadvertently spelt out the slogan, Vote for Sex. Alan.
From the Toronto Globe and Mail, Sandy. He says, the Tacopa pupfish was removed from the US government's list of endangered species yesterday, because there aren't any more.
Right, let's take a look at the final score. Jeremy and Fred have got 13 points, but this week's winners are Alan and Carrie with 14 points. And before we leave you, here is a story from the Derbyshire Times sent in by Jim Warner.
A Dronfield man could be on the road to custody after crashing a car while three times over the limit. Chesterfield magistrates were told that officers asked driver Robert Cook if he was injured, and he replied, I'm pissed. I'm five times over the limit. Are you the RAC?
And with that, goodbye.
Taking part in the news quiz were Jeremy Hardy, Fred McCauley, Carrie Quinlan and Adam Corrin. In the chair was Sandy Toksvig. The news was read by me, Rory Morrison. The chair script was written by Lucy Clark, Roger Crooks and Simon Littlefield, with additional material by Matthew Morton. And the producer was Ed Morris.